I was pulling into the driveway when I actually heard it. It was an interview that caught my attention that allowed me to sit in a over 100-degree truck just wanting to hear the next 20 minutes of where it went. The interview was with a psychologist named Dr. Lori Santos. She's a Yale professor, psychology professor. She teaches the most popular class on campus. In fact, 1/4 of all the Yale students take her class every semester. In order to get into the class, you have to sign up early and then get put on a waiting list. The class is called Psychology 157. It's the science of well-being. It's become such a hit that this semester, Yale decided to put it online. Guess how many people signed up? Semester one, within a month, 130,000 people. It's been nicknamed the happiness class. Well, if I was a college student, I would take a class called happiness, wouldn't you? They're not idiots, they're Yale students, right? You know what prompted her to teach this class? It was the fact that 50% of all college students report an overwhelming sense of anxiety. Not just that, 30% reports disabling or debilitating depression alongside of that. In fact, high school students right now are reported with overwhelming anxiety, and most of it tied to a schedule they feel like is unmanageable. Psst, this is high school students. Those who even haven't, quote, gotten to the real world yet are already saying the unreal world is crushing me. Because, Dr. Lori Santos said, because we're social psychologists, our job was to study everything. And so she said, research told us, I know this will be shocking, that the number one thing that changed that sense of anxiety and debilitating depression was relationships and time. In fact, what they found was that pace changes everything. And so she started kidding around tongue in cheek. She said, we're psychologists. We take normal speak and we coin phrases in it to make ourselves sound more smart. And so she said, we've coined two terms. We've coined what we call time famine and time affluence. Now, nobody speaks like that. The rest of us in the real world call it busyness and rest, right? And she said, what we found was that we couldn't create more time. That was probably true. That's probably above their pay grade, even for Yale. And so she said, we spent the back half of the class doing what probably grandma already told us to do centuries ago, teaching people new habits. And she said, all we tried to do in the back half of the class after studying well-being is to say that in the midst of your time famine, you and I would call it busyness, you're going to have to form new habits if you want to have a shot at any kind of well-being. And the three habits that they said were most overwhelmingly successful: getting a little more sleep, taking a day off, taking one time per week to reflect with gratitude. Yeah, Grandma already told us that a long time ago, didn't she? Now, the reality is, this summer, if those are the cutting edge habits, I guess we've been on the cutting edge this summer at Mosaic, haven't we? Because all we've been talking about is trying to form some new habits, only we know that they're really not new habits. They're old habits that the scriptures have been redialing up for us, calling us back to time and time again. The Bible's been trying to teach us new rhythms. This series we're calling Rhythms is really just on spiritual habits that God can use to make us more like His Son Jesus, and He is our rest, right? And so we've talked about things like the Word and prayer. We've talked about confession. We've talked about fasting. We've talked about simplicity. We've talked about solitude. We've talked about worship. And now tonight we talk about this rhythm called Sabbath. Sabbath, what is it? Why is it? How is it? Let's go there tonight. All I remember is that our children were little. We had 4 born close together. We were pulling into the garage of the house we lived in Little Rock, and I found myself saying to the back of the van, hurry up, kids, we got to hustle out of the car so that we can. I don't even remember what we were going to do. I just remember they hustled out of the van, and I sat in the driver's seat and thought to myself. How many hundreds of times have I said that phrase? Hurry up so that we can. And then I thought, why must my children hurry up? It really feels to me like the only God-given talent they have is dawdling. That and making messes are the only two things they do pretty well. Why can't they dawdle to the next thing? Well, maybe it's because dad and mom have scheduled the next thing too quickly. I mean, it's not like they have control of our calendar or our checkbook and how we're going to manage our life. They're just the tail on this dog being wagged along. And I started thinking a lot about this issue of busyness. You know what I've noticed in our culture? The word busy is cliche banter now. See, there used to be a day you'd run into me at Walmart and I'd say, hey, how are you doing? And you would say, fine. We don't say that anymore. Everybody knows it's lame to be fine. And so now I say, how are you doing? And you say, busy. Do you know why we talk about busyness all the time as chatter with each other? Small talk? Because it's true. We're busy. And I think about where that takes us. Lisa and I, we have busy jobs. We have a large family. We have the privilege of caring for those below us a generation and caring for those above us in a generation. We have the privilege of doing life with a lot of you. We have never not used the phrase busy, and we've been married 32 years young. Sometimes we even tell ourselves when we get to the next season, we'll be less busy. I think we're finally buying into the fact that that's a con job, and it's just not true. So if you were talking to a couple like Mark and Lisa, how would you coach us to experience God in the midst of the busyness? Would you keep telling us to hold out? There's another season that's going to slow down? And I don't believe it anymore, do you? Or would you say there's just no shot? This is Americana, and you're just going to have to deal with it. I hope you'd have something for us. And I think the scriptures do. In fact, when I look at the Bible, I see only one answer to the issue of how we experience the life of God and the rest of Jesus in the middle of busyness. Not after busyness, not before busyness, but in the middle of busyness. Because if Jesus can't meet us there, I'm sorry. I need a better gospel. How about you? And so I think the one answer and one answer only is a simple little word called Sabbath. What is Sabbath? Well, it comes from a Hebrew word. The word Shabbat, you sometimes will hear. In fact, we have a Jewish synagogue up in Bentonville, and they will talk about Shabbat services that start at sundown on Friday, and it continues to sundown on Saturday. Shabbat really just means, or Sabbath really just means rest. Literally, it means stop or cease. You know, Sabbath goes back to the dawn of time, to the very first beginning of man entering the rat race. You see it on page 2 in the Bible, in Genesis chapter 2, where the story of creation says this. Verse 1 of chapter 2 in Genesis says, "Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day God had finished the work he had been doing. So, on the seventh day he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done." Now we know that the creation story includes 7 days, but the scriptures clearly tell us that the creating itself was done in 6 days. And every part of us wants to be the efficiency expert, right? God put in 1 day too many. What are we going to do with that day? How are we going to fill that time? What did God do to fill that time? I know, he must have been tired. After all, he just created universes. No, God didn't rest because God was tired. The work of the galaxies was such a small thing for God, he spoke and it happened. His power is unlimited in supply. Why did he rest? Well, because he wasn't taking a day off. The scriptures here never said God went, whew, at the end of day 6 and said, now it's some me time, right? I'm peopled out, or however it is you talk about your life. And so I think I'll rest. No, he was actively engaging in the delight and glory of everything he had just done because it was that good. Day seven, this Sabbath, this rest day was a very full day of enjoying the work of God. Why would God do that? Because God is a lover and a worker. He is not a machine who simply does 24/7 kinds of production. And we who are created in his image are both lovers and workers as well. We are not a machine who just get value on how much we can produce. He built into the rhythm of life in the very beginning of creation a day of rest. And this is what stuns me. And maybe I'm such a simple man, I'm just finally catching it. But see if you can follow and focus in on me right now and follow the logic. In this story, we get our rhythm of how to do life. So this is day seven, this table, this day of rest. On what day did God make man and woman? Day six. And on day six, he creates Adam and Eve, and he gives us our mandate to work and cultivate and care for and steward and get busy with all the goodness that God has done. We're supposed to get our hands dirty and go to work with God. On day six, that's our created mandate. What does our first day of life look like? Day seven, rest. And then on day one, we get up and we work. Don't you see the rhythm of life is exactly opposite how we would coach it, teach it, even train our children to do it. God says we are working from our rest, not just resting after we get to work. And we don't understand that. And I'm not totally sure we even believe that. We were created to work out of resting with God and understanding that all he has done, all he is doing, and all he will do. And then out of that, we busily get stewarding the things that God has put in our life. Our productivity actually flows out of our rhythm of rest. We don't just rest after we've been productive. That spiritual principle is so revolutionary that Jesus rehashes it and repeats it to us right before he goes to the cross. In John chapter 15, he says, I want you to be radically fruitful in your life on earth. So your job is to rest in me. Remain in me. And if you do that out of my rest or resting well in me, then you will be fruitful in life. That is indeed our call. I remember seeing the very first Lord of the Rings movie, and I actually saw it on opening night in the theater. And it's not because I'm a Tolkien geek. It's because my neighbor Charles was beyond a Tolkien geek. If he didn't have such a professional job, I think he would have dressed up like Gandalf and walked around the neighborhood all the time. For a year, he kept telling me that Lord of the Rings movie was going to be released. For a year, he kept badgering me to read the novels, and he would take me. He finally dragged me to the theater at midnight on the Thursday night that it opened. That's midnight as in your work week, midnight it starts. That's midnight as in I go to bed at 10, Charles. But I like Charles. And so I went to the theater with him. And I can still remember the scene where Bilbo, the hobbit, was talking to his young nephew, Frodo. Bilbo, at that point, was aged. And he was worn out and tired. And he turned to his young nephew, Frodo, and he said, Frodo, my son, I am tired and my soul has worn thin, like too little jam being spread across too much toast. And it struck a chord with me. And it hurt. Because I was in that theater not just because it was late at night. I was tired in that theater not because it was just late. I was tired because we had been walking through a multi-year season where things at work and at home were so pressure-packed. And I told myself, you only take a day off after you get it done. And my soul had worn thin. If you've seen the movie, you know what happens next. Bilbo erupts in ugly anger and greed at Frodo. And that too struck a chord. Because I am ugliest to the people I love most when I am tired and my soul has worn thin. Is there anybody else in the room who can relate? Yeah. We've been scraped across too much of life's toast, and we've got to move back to a life that Jesus offers. So how do we do it? Well, maybe we fast forward in the biblical story from page 2 of the Bible, the Genesis creation account, to the second book of the Bible, the book of Exodus. And in the book of Exodus, which we saw already when we did our series in Exodus, God called a nation, Israel, to have a special relationship with him. You see, Israel had been slaving for generations under Egyptian rule with no rest. They had been told by the Egyptian way of doing life, you only get to rest after you get all the work done, and yet the empire gave no rest. And God delivered them miraculously for Egypt. He walks them across a desert, and he leads them to a mountain called Sinai. And there God says, before you get into the new land, the land of promise, the land of rest, I need to give you new ways of living, new rules to live by, because for generations you've not gotten it, and I want you to get it before you're in the land. And those new rules we call the Ten Commandments. And commandment number 4 of the Ten Commandments is Exodus chapter 20, verse 8. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. What does that mean, to keep the Sabbath day holy? It must mean doing a lot of religious things and being super, super serious while you do them. Or it could mean what God says it means. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God, and on it you shall not do any work. Neither you, nor your son and daughter. Ah, rats. Nor your manservant or maidservant. I don't have those anyway. Nor your animals, nor the stranger or the alien within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth. Oh, don't you see what he's doing? He's giving an Old Testament commandment to the nation of Israel, the Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and he's not basing it on being Jewish. He's basing it on a creation story. You're going to live like this because that's how I live, and you're going to look like me and act like me because you're my people. For in 6 days I made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that's in them, but God rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. God says, I want you to look like me. I want you to act like me. And no surprise, it's going to have to include regular rhythms of rest. Rest, he says, is the fourth commandment. Funny, I've always treated it like the fourth really good suggestion. How about you? It's also the only commandment that begins with the word remember. Did you know that? It's like we're prone to forget to rest. I didn't wake up today, come to church and say, now don't forget, don't murder anybody. Don't murder, don't murder. So that one doesn't have to start with remember. This one, God says remember because he knows we're prone to treat it like it's really probably good advice. Not really needed. My dentist gives me good advice. Mark, make sure you floss while you brush or after you brush. It's probably good. Really not essential. I'll just brush because I'm too busy. And God, you must kind of be the same way. Don't have idolatry. Don't fracture your relationships through adultery. Don't covet. Don't steal. Don't lie. And then you're tossing in a good health measure too, a suggestion. Get a little rest. And let's be honest, we treat it like that, don't we? We never would look at it as a command that we would be eager to obey. Which is odd. You would think we'd be eager to obey the command to rest. But we're not. Warren Wiersbe, a famous Bible teacher, he says it this way, the ability to calm your soul and wait before God is one of the most difficult things in the Christian life. Why? because our old nature is restless and the world around us is frantically in a hurry. But a restless heart usually leads to a reckless life. Ouch. And that's not just the story of our biography, that's the story of human history. See, remember, Israel was given this command before they entered into the land of promise, but for the next 1,400 years, they treated God's commands like they were 10 really good suggestions. Not really that absolutely needed. And so as a result, including their breaking of the commandment to rest, they experienced 1,400 years of reckless living, falling into cycles of sin, saying, oops, we got to do better, trying to repent and come around, being delivered by God, falling back into a cycle of sin, and this continued to happen all the way through their history to such a point where God spit them out of the land, and they were exiled into Babylon. When they were regathered back into the land from Babylon, the religious leaders, the spiritual leaders in Israel said, we cannot get so casual with God's commands again. It went disastrous for us. So we're going to get serious about law keeping around here, including even how to keep the law of rest, how to Sabbath. So by the time that Jesus arrives on the scene, the Pharisees and the scribes had created laws to make sure that we rested. And so they sat around and they said things like, God said don't do any work on the Sabbath. So what would work be? Because we don't want to break that. I know, work would be that we make sure that we don't carry a burden on the Sabbath day, a load. Well, then they had to sit around and define what's a load, what's a burden. By the time that Jesus arrived on the scene, the Midrash and the Mishnah, they had collected laws to describe how to make sure you rest, and these are just a few of them. A burden is food equal in weight to a dried fig. Enough wine for mixing in one goblet, milk enough for one swallow, honey enough to put on one wound, oil enough to anoint one person, water enough to moisten one eye salve, paper enough to write one note, ink enough to write two letters of the alphabet, reed enough to only make one pen. And this continued on for page after page after page. Does anybody else feel worn out by that kind of rest? Jesus stepped into a scene like that where everybody was so protective of knowing how to do rest right that they wore themselves out. And into that kind of religion, Jesus stepped in and he said exactly what Mary Beth led us through in our worship time. Matthew 11. All of you who are weary and worn out and weighed down by this kind of religion and rest, come to me. And I will give you rest. And ironically, no surprise, Jesus went head to head with the Pharisees who had labored hard to rest well. And you know what one of their biggest beefs with Jesus was? Doing things on the Sabbath. Like early in his ministry, he healed a man on the Sabbath. And Jesus said, you don't get it, do you? Can I teach you what Sabbath was always supposed to be? And in Mark chapter 2, verse 27, Jesus said to the Pharisees, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. Can I paraphrase that for us? A day of rest was created by God as a gift for mankind. And I, the Yahweh, God in flesh himself, am the giver of that gift. And I tell you, come to me and receive what I have for you. I will give you rest. I want us to be really, really clear about what I'm saying and what I'm not saying. Everything in the Old Testament, including the law, including the priestly system, including all the sacrifices, everything in the Old Testament pointed to the person of Jesus Christ himself. In fact, Jesus is the fulfillment of the law, including even the fulfillment of the command to make the seventh day, which would be a Saturday from a Jewish mentality, to make it holy in a Sabbath day. That's been fulfilled in Christ, which is why Hebrews chapter 4 says Christ is our Sabbath rest. So we don't have to keep a Saturday-only kind of rest day to make sure we're fulfilling a religious law. Christ is our rest. However, if God created a day of rest from the beginning of creation, highlighted it for his people called Israel, fulfills it in the person of Christ, do you think it's wise and healthy and even good that we throw the baby out with the bathwater? I don't. We don't need to keep a day of rest as a law to be made righteous before God, but we would be foolish to think that we don't need a day of rest to remain fruitful and healthy and flourish in a life before God. How many times have we tried to use vacation as a replacement for a day of rest? Has that worked for you? Come on, own it. How many of you got back from vacation this summer and said, I need a vacation? You know why? Because the math doesn't work. You can't take 14 days of vacation in a year and make it equal to 52 days of rest. It just doesn't work. We have been wired for a day of rest each week, a 1 in 7 rhythm of rest. We've been freed from that having to be a particular day, but we are foolish to use that freedom to say, therefore, I don't need that day of rest. I believe, just as Seth said in the worship time, that busyness is draining the life out of God's people. In fact, if the church is the bride of Christ, and I believe she is, then I would say Jesus' bride looks harried and haggard to me, and frantic. And that fatigue has killed her fruitfulness. Last week, I noticed that Mickey, in his message on worship, put a famous quote up. The quote originally comes from Gordon Dahl, who's an economics professor out of Stanford. He wrote a famous book on work and rest and Sabbath. And he said this, most middle-class Americans tend to worship their work, work at their play, and play at their worship. And as a result, their values are distorted, their relationships disintegrate faster than they can keep them in repair, and their lifestyles resemble a cast of characters in search of a plot. And if that kind of franticness is what is buzzing around you, and it is, how do we experience the living God in the middle of it? Do we con ourselves into thinking someday it'll all slow down? Or do we need to realize that in the busyness, God plans a 1 in 7 day of rest for us? And it's a gift that God gives us to help us see him and see life and see others and see ourselves the way we are. Seth quoted from Norman Wiersbe, a book that he referred to me on Sabbath, a book called Living the Sabbath. And Wiersbe says, the Sabbath is not a break from life, but rather a profound theological lens that enables us to get a better look at all of us. So what does Sabbath let us see better? Well, I think number one, it helps give us a reminder. You think about why Sabbath is given. The first reason is it's a reminder. Exodus 31 says, you shall surely observe my Sabbaths, for this is a sign between me and you throughout your generations. Okay, why, God? Why observe these? He gives the answer. That you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you. You know what rest does? Rest is an intentional pushing the pause button on life, and it reminds us that we're not holding this baby together. It reminds a guy like me who was grown up with a lie that said, if it's to be, it's up to me. Sabbath says, uh-uh. God says, I am the Lord. And if it is, it's because I already am. And you need to rest in me. Wendell Berry is an author. I don't even know if he's a follower of Jesus. He's a prolific writer in our culture. And he noticed this about Sabbath. He says, the requirement of Sabbath observance invites us to stop. It invites us to rest. It asks us to notice that while we rest, the world continues without our help. I can't take a day off. I've got to get this done. And in fact, if I don't get this done around the house, it won't get done. A woman has once quoted in my home, as though she might hold that thing together. Sabbath says, I'm not the foundation upon which life is built. Second reason why God commands us to rest is that it's a refresher. Exodus 3:23 says, 6 days do your work, but on the seventh day do not work. Why? So that you may be refreshed. Listen, I don't know about you, but I can't live well without regular reminders and regular refreshments from God. Without it, I start to look as frazzled and frantic as my neighbors do. Actually, I think I look worse because I have more church things added to my schedule than my neighbors. No, we were meant to be refreshed and reminded of who God is and how He's working in our life. I read an article once that said you could sum up American culture in two words, hurry and worry. You agree? Don't you wish God had an anecdote for that? I think He does. I think we see it on the screen. You know the anecdote to worry, right? It's to be reminded that He's the Lord and He's got this. You know the anecdote to hurry, don't you? It's to be refreshed while you pause. Where do you think reminders and refreshment come from? A 1 in 7 day of rest called the Sabbath. It is the anecdote that He gives us. And the beautiful thing about being free in Christ and being freed from the burden of the religious law is that we can actually now practice our 1 in 7th day of rest in ways that are different from one another. Doesn't have to always be a Saturday, or if you're in more of a New Testament legalism, a Sunday. You could pick a Monday. If your workday starts on Monday, it might get you fired, but you could pick a Monday. Now, in our culture, most of our culture is built around a Saturday-Sunday kind of rest, but you might have a work schedule that frees you up to choose a different day. Good for you if you do. I know a family here at Mosaic who has done something that I think is very cool and profound. They practice a Sabbath every weekend, and it starts at 4 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, and it ends at 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. At 4 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, when their kids were little, called them all in, got everybody reasonably cleaned up for church, got here, and they worshiped with their friends, and they even served an hour, because for them, service wasn't a burden. It's a part of joyful rest of being in the family. You know, have you ever cooked a good meal with your family in the kitchen? It's kind of fun. And they did that and then went out to dinner afterwards. They spent the next day on Sunday just resting and enjoying. And then on Sunday afternoon, they had to reboot it back up, because we all know that Monday morning starts on Sunday night, doesn't it? And they felt refreshed and ready to work out of their rest. There's lots of flexibility in how, but a day of rest is a non-negotiable if you're going to want to live wise and well. If you're not interested in living wise or well, ignore it. But if there's some appeal to living emotionally healthy and spiritually and relationally, I'd say include a 1 in 7 day of rest as a non-negotiable. And if you do that, you will be a freak. Because to rest for 1 day a week in our culture is countercultural, which by surprise shouldn't take us by surprise, because Jesus did say the whole movement I'm starting is countercultural. You're going to have to disappoint somebody if you choose to rest 1 day. For many of our parents in the room, the person you're going to have to choose to courageously disappoint will be your own children. Is it just me, or are kids' activities the number one killer of a Sunday rest day? Yeah. And if you say, no, we're not going there and doing that, you will be awed, even among your Christian friends. And it's ironic, because we say the reason we do all that stuff for our kids on a day that we said was going to be a down day for us is because it was for our kids' benefit. And yet I think that my children need refreshers and reminders too, don't yours? Yeah, their souls are wired for rest as well. Each summer, Lisa and I teach at a large Christian camping ministry in Texas. They own 7 camps. They hire 1,200 of the sharpest Christian college students I've ever hung around. About 3 years ago, they started including one question in their interview. They interview 5,000 students a year. They take 1,200 a year. This was the question they put in their interview. These are mostly kids that grew up in Christian homes. What is the one thing you wish your parents had done differently at home when they were raising you? Is there any other parent in the room that finds that like really an appealing question to know? You know what the top two answers are for three summers in a row? I wish we wouldn't have been so busy. I wish we had more family time at home. Oh, we thought they wanted to go to another baseball tournament. And they were craving rest. Ironically, the camp directors have said we have some of the sharpest Christian kids. We've never seen such an overwhelming amount of anxiety that they deal with. And I wonder if there's a connection between the busyness at home and the anxiety they experience. So how do we do Sabbath? Psalm 92 is the only psalm in the Psalter that specifically says it's written for the Sabbath day. It begins with a song for the Sabbath day, and the opening lines are, "It is good to praise the Lord and to make music, to play in honor of your name, O Most High, to proclaim your love in the morning and your faithfulness at night." And when I look at this text, I see two main activities that are included in a good rest day. One is there's pray, and the other is there's play. I think that's why the New Jerusalem Bible translates that phrase to make music as to play in your honor. In order to make music, you have to play an instrument. And so there's a sense of recreating, but and God-given reflection at the same time. So godly rest includes both reflecting on the goodness of God, which is prayer, but it also includes leisure that refreshes us, which is that sense of play. And both of them are part of Sabbath rest. And notice that it lasts for a whole day, morning until night. And he says it's good, meaning that it actually is good for us and our souls. And I think this is why Eugene Peterson said this about Sabbath. He said, "Puritan Sabbaths that eliminated play were a disaster. Secular Sabbaths that eliminated prayer are worse." Haven't you seen that? You take a day off and you make it so austere, and you just kill the joy out of the gift of rest. But you turn right back around and you take that same day of rest and you do a frantic day of just every single kind of joy-filled activity you can think of, and it's exhausting. No, we need both prayer or reflection and play or recreation. And you see the freedom here, right? Some of us recreate differently than others, some inside, some outside, some gardening, some reading. The point is, it's built around both. And that's what makes Sabbath a reminder and a refresher. 13 years ago, we moved to Northwest Arkansas to join the Saturday night congregation. And I don't know how I looked on the outside, but I can tell you on the inside, I was exhausted. Our entire family had gone through about 7 years of hard work and hard trials. And we arrived in to do the job. You know, be eager to put your hands to the plow. And I did. And I loved what I saw here. But you know the best part about joining a Saturday night worship culture? You know what came with the package? Sunday morning. Anybody else say it? Amen? Now, there was a freaky religious part of me that felt guilty about that for 2 Sundays. On the third one, I was a convert. Something started coming back in our home. A good marriage that was really tired started to become a good marriage that was refreshed. Why? Because we went busy and got a lot of counseling? We're not above counseling. Because we did a lot of reading of books and getting our marriage fixed? No, because we rested side by side. And our relationships with our kids, likewise. I was 42 years old when I moved up here. I found a hobby for the first time in my life that wasn't just work. And I started playing well. My wife started enjoying walks. She started asking me to walk with her. And things came back alive in our relationships here, and more importantly, in our relationships with the Lord, because of a 1 in 7 day of rest. And so we love to come and worship with our people. You're our people. Serve our people. You're our people. It's fun to serve together. Eat good food after we do those. And then linger all day on Sunday. And it's refueling and life-giving. And the guy whose soul was tired and thin came back to life. I'm converted about a 1 in 7 day of rest. And I unashamedly stand before you right now and say, I am trying to convert you. Because I love you. And I want to see life come back. Hey, will you stand? And can we close by simply reading the Sabbath psalm out loud together? It is good to give thanks to the Lord, to make music, to praise your name, O Most High. It is good to announce your mercy in the morning and your faithfulness in the evening. You made me find joy in what you have done, O Lord. I will sing joyfully about the works of your hands. How spectacular are your works, O Lord. How very deep are your thoughts. And he has those deep thoughts for you and for your life and for your well-being. Would you take seriously a 1 in 7 day of rest and do the hard work of planning how you'll live it out? You're going to notice when you read the Bible that the Jews had to have a day of preparation for the Sabbath. In other words, they didn't stumble into rest. We had to do our chores this morning so that we could rest tomorrow. And so will you as you plan it. But it's worth it.